Christmas sucks. I hate it. You gotta get used to working holidays. We're talking Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Hit it. It was 1982. John McEnroe was a world number one. Bruce Springsteen released a Nebraska album. And high schoolers love their lives at Christmas time. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now, joining me are three Totally Rad Christmas all-stars and ratty winners. My first guest you'll know from After Lunch, Crestwood House, and Hellbent for Letterbox podcast. It's Michael May. Michael, how's it going?
Doing well, doing well. You want another Coke? You sure you don't want anything else? What else can we order?
It's good to see you, man. It's been a while.
Yeah.
I think the last thing we talked was V, and I know we got Cagney and Lacey coming up probably in a month or so. So yeah, it's good to see you.
Good to
Always
see you.
A pleasure.
Thanks. Same.
My next guest you've heard on Holly Jolly Xmas Suit, it's Scott Leopold. Scott, what's happening?
Hey, Jerry. Just enjoying the weather.
You like the vibe? Is it, does it make you feel like the mall, right? Well, it's good to have you back on the show as well. So I think you were just, didn't we just talk Chris Stamey? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's good to see you as well. But finally, you'll know him as the host of 80s Flick Flashback. It's Tim Williams. Tim, what's up, man?
I just want you to know one thing. No shirt, no shoes, no dice. Read it, know it, live it. Yeah. I'm good, man. It's good to be back on the show.
It's good to have you. Yeah. It's been one of those years, I'm telling you. I cannot seem to catch up this year. So it's good to have you on. I don't think you've been on since, it's been like months, I think.
Yeah, it's been a while, but it's all good. Yeah. Happy to be here whenever you can fit me in.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. We're talking like a really fun, like classic movie, right? Like this is one of those like quintessential 80s teen comedy movies. But before we do that, just like Carol Kane did to Bill Murray and Scrooged, I want you to hit me with the toaster. So I'm going to ask you a few questions and I want you to hit me with the first answer you think of. Okay, you don't have to think too hard about it. So let's say that you're making a Christmas Story, you know, the movie from 1983, a Christmas Story. You're remaking it with the cast of Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Of course, we know Mr. Hand would be the old man. Who would you cast as Ralphie?
Judge Reinhold.
Yeah.
Rat was the first one that comes to my mind. Rat, that's also interesting.
I think he works too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, I was going with Rat as well. That was my initial thought. So.
All right, I like that. Okay, what would you title a Hallmark movie, a Hallmark Christmas movie specifically, starring Stacy and Rat?
All I want for Christmas is my wallet.
That's a good one.
Mall I want for Christmas is.
Oh, yeah. See, I was looking for the good pun, and I wasn't getting it in time. I like that one.
Yeah, I can't top that. So,
or deck the malls, right?
Deck the mall. That's even better.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, which 80s movie character is most likely to date Linda?
John Bender.
Okay. That is good.
I can see that. Yeah.
That's pretty spot on right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For some reason, every time I was thinking, while I was writing this question, the only thing I could think of was Brant from The Goonies. But yeah. I don't think that's right. That's just like the only thing I could think of. And then I couldn't get it out of my head.
I was trying to think of like a sleazeball college student.
Yeah.
Nothing
yeah.
was coming to mind. There's got to be one, but I just thought.
I'm sure there is, right? Well, that's just a way for our listeners to get to know y'all a little bit better. So thank you for that. Now, tonight, we're here to talk Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Be clear, this isn't quite a Christmas movie. it's definitely Christmas adjacent. But what do you guys remember about this movie? Like, what's your history or experience with it? Why don't we start with you, Michael?
It came out before I was of age to be able to see it. I wasn't allowed to go see R-rated movies as a kid. My parents didn't encourage that kind of behavior. So it wasn't until later when I was able to catch it on VHS that I finally saw it. All of my friends were going to see it. They all talked about it. They all quoted it at school. I felt super left out. So finally, when I was able to see it, I was like, okay, yeah. And I was pleased that it was as good, as funny as they all made it out to be.
Yep. Agreed. Tim?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same boat there. I didn't see it as a kid. Definitely wasn't old enough to see it when it came out in the theaters. And it wasn't one. I mean, I saw R-rated movies as a kid, but usually with my parents in the room.
Right.
And this is one I'm sure that they were like, they probably didn't even see it, but had probably heard from other parents like, yeah, this is not the one for you to watch with your kids. So I think it had to have been like the early to mid 90s, like maybe after I graduated from high school, when I saw the theatrical, because I think it came on TV. I saw some TV version at some point and kind of, you know, which was cool today. I didn't realize because I just bought the Criterion collection or whatever Fast Times a couple of months ago, and I pulled it out today, and it actually has the TV version as a version you can watch on there,
Wow.
which I didn't watch today. I'm going to go back and watch it because it said it has some additional and deleted scenes in it. But I'm like, that's probably the one that I remember seeing the first time. But
cool.
But yeah, but I didn't see it again. And I mean, I didn't watch it for like the theatrical, the uncut version until probably like early high school. And then I hadn't seen it again until probably like 2 or 3 years ago when I started my podcast. And it's one that I know people talked about, but it wasn't one that I'm really tied to nostalgia for because I discovered it so much later than when it came out. So, but I really enjoyed it. And of course, becoming a Cameron Crowe fan as I got older and seeing his later movies, like going back and realizing that it was based on the book that he wrote and his screenplay, kind of his foray into movie making. So it's definitely at a high list of favorite movies for those.
Right on. Yeah. What about you, Scott?
This is one of the reasons I was glad we had Showtime and a VCR when I was a kid.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I think I remember reading this is definitely one of the most paused scenes.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. VHS copies, yeah.
Yeah, and well, and we watched it fairly often, just not, it wasn't one of the ones we watched all the time. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I saw it plenty, but, you know, we didn't play quite as often as like Risky Business. So, still one of the ones we really enjoyed.
Yeah. I can't imagine why. no, and I'm right there with you guys. I was definitely too young to watch it when it came out. And I wouldn't have been allowed to, even if I was a little older. Saw it for the first time, probably like you, Tim. I remember seeing like, you know, I remember seeing like on TV, TBS or TNT or USA, one of those, right? I remember seeing it, not the full thing. I didn't understand really what was going on. And then later on in, you know, in the 90s when I was in high school, then it was like, oh, I get it now. And this, yeah, it was fantastic movie, and I remember buying it, you know, on VHS. There was a Half Price Books like literally across the street from my apartment when I was in college, and I remember just walking over and it was there, and I was like, yeah, that's a good one. And I think I got Purple Rain at the same time. And it was, you know, just like these classics that like people sold because they were buying them on DVD at that time. And I was like, well, I still love VHS. Let me grab these. So I do remember this was one that I picked up, you know. I bought Clue also. But like this, you're right. It's definitely one of the most like popular teen movies, right? And I think it's still, there's in a lot of ways it doesn't hold up, but it still has themes that like mm-hmm. hold up even mm-hmm. to this day, things that are relevant, you know, and also things that our technology has definitely moved beyond, but right. Overall, like it's just, it's funny, it's grimy, it's like, it's witty. I mean, it's just, it's really well written. And I think a lot of that, like you said, has to do with Cameron Crowe and things like that. So released August 13th, 1982, written by Cameron Crowe, like you mentioned, based on his novel. He actually went undercover for a year mm-hmm. at a local high school in order to like get the vibe and everything. And this was directed by Amy Heckerling, who, of course, I remember as the director of Clue later on. Yep. Or excuse me, Clueless. Clueless yeah. later on. So, sorry, I got hung up on Clue. You know, but like Clueless is like another just fun mm-hmm. high school movie, you know? So we're like Fast Times is like teens of the 80s. You know, mm-hmm. Clueless is like teens of the 90s. And mm-hmm. so I just feel like Amy Heckerling somehow really knows teens mm-hmm. like she's mm-hmm. got them down, because everything they do and say was like everything that I saw growing up. I was like, yeah. this is, I had friends, it was like Rat, and I had friends, it was like, what's a Damone, you know? I mean, it's oh, just yeah, like yeah. like these are like just classic archetypes almost that, you know, just keep reoccurring in like everyday life. It's so mm-hmm. insane.
Yeah, and you have to remember, this is before the John Hughes era, where, you know, people want to say that John Hughes, I mean, of course, I'm not taking anything away from John Hughes, but, you know, he made different type of teen movies, but really you wouldn't have John Hughes without Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I mean, because everything before that was much more of the Porky's and like the, you know, the sex comedies and stuff like that. But Crowe wanted it to be more real. And so that's what the whole point of the book was, being like real conversations, real things that teenagers were doing, instead of these, you know, caricatures of what a teenager does. And then John Hughes just kind of found a different way to tell the kind of tell the same stories, but did it in a right. different, in a more PG way, I guess we'd say, than or PG-13 at least, than this one was. But I know we'll get into it, but like rewatching it today, the opening credits, I'm like, if you want a time capsule of like the early 80s,
for sure.
I mean, those opening credits, like that, you could just stop it after that. Like once it says directed by Amy Heckerling, just shut off the TV and like, that is the 80s in a nutshell. The mall, you know, mm-hmm. hanging out at the mall, the fashion, the arcades, like, you know, it was like, this is my childhood in like, you know, 2.5 minutes. And of course the Bangles song, oh, we got the beat as well. So If that's like
the Go-Go's, the Go-Go's,
was the Go-Go's, yeah, not the yeah. Bangles, you're right. So, but yeah, so that just, I much like you said, like, much like Clueless kind of encapsulates the 90s, this one does a good job, at least the early 80s encapsulated pretty well.
Yeah, for sure. I gotta say, watching this again made me miss malls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's yeah. still malls yeah. around, but yeah. like they don't have the same feel to them.
No,
like, I remember like in junior high, even like my friends and I just going, hanging around the mall, you know, just oh, yeah. walking around, doing, going to the stores, just
who needs money?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, around. Just hanging out like,
yeah.
Well, and I've told my daughters about that, you know, a Saturday after Sunday or Saturday afternoon at the mall, you're shoulder to shoulder with people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah.
Packed. Yeah. And I'm like, you don't even see that at Christmas now. So mm-hmm. It's a shame they missed out on that, because it's, you know, it's something that some of the best times I had, you know, back in high school and college were just mm-hmm. doing nothing at the mall all day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember some of my friends and I, like the girls, we would go and they would just try on different clothes. We'd just go to like a store and they're like, let's go try mm-hmm. on clothes. We're like, okay.
Yeah.
And then it was like, then they'd say, "Hey, try this on." So, okay. So we'd go check, like we were just, I mean, just had nothing to do, you know, and then we go to the record store and just like, look, mm-hmm. well, I guess CDs mm-hmm. at that point, but like, just look at CDs and cassettes forever. Oh, yeah. And I mean, it was like, it was cool. I miss that because we have a mall that's like 10 minutes away and it still has a record store because records are now kind of coming back in fashion, mm-hmm. but like there's no, it has a Barnes and Noble, so that's cool. But like, I remember Walden Books was huge, mm-hmm. but
Dalton's.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Dalton's, or, yeah, yeah, or Dalton's. Right, right. But there's no KB, like the,
no
the,
good
the toy
store.
Stores are just not great.
Yeah.
No movie theater.
Yeah, yeah. Movie theater, I missed the movie right? theater and the mall.
Yeah, yeah. I was telling a friend just the other day. I was telling a friend of mine how when Groundhog Day and what was the other one, Mad Dog and Glory came out. Went to the mall and we sat there. We watched Groundhog Day and then walked next door and watched right. Mad Dog and Glory. And I was like, it was great. We're there for like, you know, 5-6 hours mm-hmm. and you just can't do that now.
No, no. We got out of our parents' hair, but also like yeah, yeah. they wanted us to get out of their hair, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
you know, my nowadays.
Mom, yeah. My mom never complained about dropping me and my friends off at the mall.
Exactly.
Or the arcade. For 5 or 6 hours. Yeah.
We had an arcade called Tilt that was like in the mall. And I remember just going to Tilt and spending, you know, like stupid amounts of money at the arcade just playing video games. And I wish I had some of that money back, but you know, I mean, it was good times, I gotta say.
Mm-hmm. See, one friend of mine, his mom wanted us out of her hair for a few hours, so she got us in to see Rambo, even though we were nice. We were nowhere yeah. near old
yeah.
enough.
Oh, but, for yeah. sure, yeah.
she was like, you know, if I can chop by myself for a couple hours, they can go see Rambo.
Yep, right same on. Same. Me and my friend went and saw Rambo with my mom. And his mom were in the other theater watching Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. And Rambo was over first, so we had to go into their theater, and I watched like the last 20 minutes of Mad Max going like, what is this? What is happening? I have no
Missed
idea.
Master Blaster, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you won in that scenario.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
too, I gotta say, and I love Mad Max. Don't get me
oh,
wrong.
Oh yeah, yeah, but, yeah. It's fun to watch now, but then it's
I
like
I think you won. Yeah. So, the movie chronicles the lives of certain high schoolers and like their dating habits. It's basically just a coming of age kind of story, right? Mm-hmm. So we get Linda and Stacy.
Christmas sucks. I hate it.
You gotta get used to working the holidays. People are always screaming and yelling.
I have to quit this job. I'm gonna get so fat working here, no one's ever gonna want to take me out.
I guess Ron hasn't called yet, huh? Not since November.
And they're like good friends. Linda's kind of mentoring Stacy a little bit because they work at the same place. And I guess Linda's a senior and Stacy's a freshman. And basically, it's about their sexual history and awakening and things like that. And so Stacy's older brother is Brad, played by Judge Reinhold. Of course, we know him from Beverly Hills Cop.
Wow. You know, it says here that by the time the average American is 50, he's got 5 pounds of undigested red meat in his bowels.
Which, and vice versa, which you mm-hmm. remember, Tim?
Yeah.
We yep. talked about that.
Ruthless people.
Ruthless people.
Ruthless people, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And later on, the Santa Claus.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, so Judge Reinhold's like got his own, you know, he's like the clean cut. I mean, he's in Gremlins, you know, he's the,
oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
kind of the,
yeah.
the, pardon my, you know, the douchey guy in Gremlins. Yeah. You know, but he's the, I don't know if he's really the protagonist, but he's one of yeah, this group yeah. of protagonists. So, mm-hmm. you know, because it really is like an ensemble cast here.
Right.
Linda, of course.
Phoebe Cates. Who's also in Gremlins.
Who's also in Gremlins, right. Yeah. right. You know?
The worst thing that ever happened to me was on Christmas. God, it was so horrible. It was Christmas Eve. I was 9 years old. Me and Mom were decorating the tree.
Drop Dead Fred later mm-hmm. on. I mean, gorgeous, gorgeous girl. Very pop, you know, popular scene with Moving in Stereo in the background mm-hmm. by the cars. Everybody knows that scene. Like, if you're a boy, you know that scene. And but also, like, she's the senior. She's like the worldly one. She's mm-hmm. worked at the mall for a few years now. She has a college boyfriend, and which, by the way, I got to say, while I was doing research for this, I discovered that there actually was a series that was based on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've never seen that. I don't really know anything about it, but apparently in the series, at some point, Brad and Linda do get together. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Hi, Brad.
Hi, Linda. Say, I know you're going to be busy, but do you think you could save a dance for me at the party?
I know I watched it.
Did you watch it?
I know I did.
Oh, okay.
I can't tell you anything about it.
Right. Right. It's not the original cast, right?
Uh-huh. No, no.
Yeah, like,
but the guy that played Chainsaw in Summer School played the role of Spicoli. So that's how I know about the show, because we covered Summer School and Fast Times on my podcast. So that was the thing that joined those two things together.
That's
so
hard to mesh in my brain.
That's the 80s, man. That's the
80s. I mean, yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah. And isn't that how he got the role in Summer School, was that they saw him in the Fast Times TV mm-hmm. series? Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I believe it. I do. But so Brad's kind of popular, right? He's dating like this another gorgeous girl who, and it's the girl from Nightmare on Elm Street, isn't it?
Yeah. Amanda Wiss. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's also in Better Off Dead.
Right. Right. Well, we also get Mark.
Oh, that's right.
We also get Mark Ratner in this. Brian Backer, who I knew from Police Academy 4. That's like the only mm-hmm. other thing I really know him from.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's one of the kids that they like prank with the yama, 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 yama. And he has like a big crush on Jennifer Jason Leigh, who's, you know, Stacy, who's mm-hmm. Brad's little sister. She's the one that in this movie loses her virginity, has sex with his best friend, gets pregnant, has an abortion, and then eventually gets with Mark. I mean, it's like she has like this whole long journey. Spoiler alert for this 40-plus year old movie.
She's really the protagonist, which is pretty remarkable for an early 80s, like
high school
sex comedy.
Right. Yeah, right. You're right. I mean, that's, you know, most of the time it was like the guys who were just so obsessed with sex that they, you know, were trying to get it from wherever they could. You know, you look at Porky's and Revenge of the Nerds and like all these, so you're right. In a way it's kind of progressive, right? It's like, mm-hmm. like a very daring kind of movie,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool. We get also, you mentioned him, Spicoli, Sean Penn, of course, famously married Madonna in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
has went on to do a lot of other great movies. What is it? Mystic River. Is that what it is?
Yeah. Mystic River.
Yep. And,
At Close Range. You guys ever see At Close Range?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Close Range. Yep.
See, someone on Facebook got mad at me recently because they'd asked, you know, what's Sean Penn's greatest role? I said, Spicoli.
What did they think? What was their argument?
Right.
That's kind of undeniable, right?
They thought I was being immature and joking. I'm like, no.
Like, have you seen it?
Yeah. There really is. That's like his greatest, like his most memorable role out of everything mm-hmm. he's done, honestly. He's like the stoner surfer guy who gets into it with his teacher, Mr. Hand.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Ray Walston, you know, of course, the classic actor there. But, you know, Mr. Hand is like very by the book. This is my time. You're going to do everything. And Spicoli is like ordering pizza in class. Mm-hmm. I got to say, though, because, you know, I'm building up. I'm doing a quick run through of this so we can build up to like more of a discussion about certain topics and things. But I got to say, when Mr. Hand goes to Spicoli's house and is in his room and he's looking, and you just see like all the posters and pinups of like all the magazines. I mean,
because he looks like right when he's about to leave, he like looks at the wall and he's just like, he's exasperated. Like, why do I even try?
He's just lost faith in humanity. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and one thing I liked about it is that, you know, it really kind of reinvigorated Ray Walston's career, because mm-hmm. for a few years after this, you saw him everywhere.
Everything. Right? Yeah.
I remember him like so much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Rad.
He was in Rad. That's right. That's right. He's the owner that invests in Rad Racing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh man, that's great. I love Rad. But yeah, you're right. It's like, we have all these little separate little vignette kind of things, but it all ties together in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we have Damone, who's a Rat's friend. This dude, I gotta say, he's not a good guy. It's Robert Romanus, and I mean, he knew that Rat had a crush on Stacy, but you know, Stacy came on to him, so he's like, "Well, what am I gonna do?" But
right?
It's like,
right?
You don't do that to your boy, man. Come on. Mm-hmm. But he's like the local ticket scalper, which is mm-hmm. which is another thing. Like that, you can't do that anymore. You know, I mean.
Not on that level anyway, right?
They don't even sell paper tickets anymore. So now how can you can't scalp anything? Like, so.
Oh man, that whole industry just went down the drain.
Yeah. Can't sag my ticket stubs when I go to concerts anymore. Like what has happened to our mm-hmm. world?
Oh, ticket for sure. Yeah. So I want to, because this is a Christmas podcast, I do want to talk the Christmas parts. You know, so Stacy and Linda work at this pizza joint, right? Perry's Pizza. Stacy lies about her age to this stereo salesman, and they end up going on a date, and then she loses her virginity to him in like a baseball dugout.
Yeah. How romantic.
Yeah. Right. Like the best place to do that, right?
Right, right. As she's reading the graffiti on the walls and the ceiling.
So, yeah, but all this kind of happens around Christmas time. Like, Rat meets Stacy. He's, like, super enamored with her, like, just kind of smitten. So he asks her out. And this is where, like, it's the mall. It's, like, Christmassy background. There's, like, a mall Santa eating at Stacy's yes. restaurant. Mm-hmm. And this dude is the worst.
He's got a rough job, though. He's got kids peeing on him.
Yeah, no, that's yeah.
true.
Yeah,
that's true. It could be justified.
Right, right. He's had a rough day.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I'll take it. Yeah. But there's also when they actually go out on their date, you know, they go to that, was it like a German restaurant?
I think it was a German restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
And but there's like a big Christmas tree in the background, and there's mm-hmm. garland and wreaths and things like that. And so it's, there is Christmas in this movie, but it's definitely a Christmas adjacent movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, Michael, you were telling us about when you were watching this movie and your wife walked in right on that scene.
yeah was that before we started recording?
It was
she walked through and she's like, what are you watching? It's a random movie for me to be watching, you know. It's not the weirdest thing in the world that she's caught me watching, but she said yeah, why are you watching this? I said, what's for a Christmas podcast? And fortunately it was on that scene, so I was able to point
right.
Right. The screen is like, look at all the Christmas decorations. So, right. Like, she shrugged her shoulders. Okay.
You say so.
Right. But I mean, the whole thing basically takes place over the calendar year, right? It's like mm-hmm. when it starts, or not calendar, excuse me, the school year.
School year. Yeah.
It's like it starts in September, makes its way through Christmas. And then, I mean, it ends with Spicoli kind of passing graduation and mm-hmm. like all the seniors moving on. So, okay, so I do have a couple of questions that I really want to get to. I got to say, how do you think high school has changed since like the days of Fast Times? Like, how is it also the same though? You know, so like, how would you see the differences and how, like, what elements do you also think have stayed the same?
A great question. My son is, he's out of high school a few years now, so that far removed from it. But just my observation of his high school experience versus my high school experience is a lot less cliques. And it's kind of interesting. Like, cliques don't really come up too much in Fast Times. Like, they really are more prevalent in other high school movies. But it was a big thing. You know, you had like, you had your stoners, you had right. your
the jocks, the nerds,
jocks, the smart kids. You know, all of that, and that was all blended a lot more, I think, in his high school experience.
Yeah, I mean, they still have them, but it's not, the delineation is nowhere near what it was 40 mm. years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, the stoners in my school, you know, they were their own group. You did right. not really mess yeah. with them if they weren't in your classes. And it, now, I mean, just seeing what my daughters go through, it's not as cut and dry as it was back when we were in mm-hmm. high school. So.
Well, my daughter is a freshman. Tomorrow's her first day of school. So, I'm just so curious because same, like we had like the group that we knew exactly who they were. They stayed over on the tables that were outside, you know, so we knew that, okay, stay away from that group unless you're like wanting to feel pretty good, you know. But
there was a very clear entry requirement for that group.
Right, exactly. But you're right. I think because like nerd and geek culture has kind of populated the mainstream.
Yeah.
I think it's not, you know, it's like there's not as much of a stigma to like be into superheroes, say, you know, that I think it has kind of made more of a homogeneous kind of mixture of things. But
it seems like there's a lot more delineation just based on like the clubs and the teams they're on. So you've got, you know, the drama kids, they're all, they all hang together, but you've got so much overlap because you've got athletes who are into drama and band kids who are into, you know, some might play a sport or whatever. So, I mean, you've got it. I don't know. I think it's easier for, at least at my girl's school, just because if there's something you're interested in, you've got a built-in group of friends. Mm-hmm. Whereas
that's cool.
You know, the cliques back then, you didn't necessarily, if you didn't fit in just right with the clique, you were not part of it.
Right.
So.
Right. It's true. Cause even in band, I mean, when I remember, you know, even in band, there were like the popular kids in band and then, you know, like the rest of us, you know, you know, so it really was different. But I think at the same time, I think there's always going to be the same kind of pressures and, you know, things like that. I mean, there's always going to be those that push in for substance abuse and, you know, I mean, there's still going to be the pressures of raging hormones and, so in a way, I think this movie, and I think that's why it still kind of holds up today, because it still deals with like you're changing hormones and your like physical appearance and just everything that like you still have to deal with at that age. I mean, she's just a freshman, right? She's only 15. So
it's such a unique time because you really are trying to figure out who you are. And you're kind of trying out different things and putting on different identities and, you know, ticking it off if it doesn't work for you. And that's one thing I really like about Stacy's kind of journey that school year is, you know, she kind of grows up. She kind of goes into the school year under the influence of Linda, who has, you know, very specific attitudes about sex. And so Stacy kind of adopts that and tries that on and then learns that it doesn't really work for her.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe this is just my perspective, but I also feel like Linda was giving her a lot of false information too. Like, I felt like she was trying to make herself seem like she was more experienced than she really was, which I think is, you know, I think once again, is still true today where you're going to have those people that are going to like, you know, tell you they've done all this stuff. And of course her boyfriend's in college and not close by. So there's no one to back up her claims, you know? So,
and there's some inconsistencies in her stories.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. That was something I picked up on and thought about. And even somewhat with Ramon, too. Like, and I was watching the little documentary or behind the scenes thing on the Blu-ray where the actor, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting his name all of a sudden, but that played Ramon.
Romanus,
he was like, he basically played the character like, he was a transplant from New Jersey. Like he said, most kids that like transfer from somewhere else, they always like have this air of like being a little more cool or a little more, you know, have a little bit more attitude, even though he's very much laid back.
Except Daniel LaRusso. Sorry.
Yeah. That was kind of his, but he did kind of, you know, he was telling Rat some things that like he probably wouldn't do, you know. So I appreciated that you had both sides where Linda was giving some false information to Stacy and Ramon was giving false information to Rat, and which causes even more confusion with the two of them trying to like get together and not really being able to until the very end. So yeah,
but also it's kind of a punk move by Damone, right?
Yeah.
Come on, man. Like, it's your friend. He's into her. I mean, you don't do that you got to ask permission first, right?
Yeah. But, that was not me in high school. And I'm also thinking like 17-year-old boys.
Yeah,
if the opportunity's there, I don't know.
Yeah, and I can't think of a time where a guy I knew, asked before pulling something like that.
Can I call Rat real fast?
I'll be right back. I got a quick phone call.
Never would have happened. Yeah.
No, you're right. I mean, it's true. It is true. But
today would have been like, oh man, I meant to text you before. I'm sorry, man. I texted you, but I forgot to hit send, and then I didn't get a response. I thought it was okay.
Yeah. How does the film, in your opinion, how does the film portray the insecurities of being an adolescent? How does it do it, and how does it do it authentically?
Go ahead,
Rat and Stacy, I think, embody it better than anybody in this.
Yeah.
I mean, Judge Reinhold's character, he has his moments for sure, but but as far as just characterizing that whole unsure feeling that you have at that age, I think the two of them are the two best characters in the movie from that regard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say, for me, I think none of the parents are in the movie. The only adult in the movie are the teachers. Mr. Ann is kind of the primary, and then you got the science teacher that's grossing everybody out. But there's no real parental influence. And so even looking back, even though my parents were around and were there to give me advice, most of my memories were with my friends. We weren't asking our parents for information. We were figuring it out as we were living it. So I think that was, and once again, that still kind of holds true in even the John Hughes era, mm-hmm. of where it was they're kids that are trying to figure out what it's like to make adult decisions. And so are they going to make their best decisions? Of course not. Cause that's all part about growing up and making stupid decisions and learning about the consequences of them. So that was a part that it stood out to me today watching it again.
Okay, well, that's actually a good point. You brought up John Hughes. How does this compare to John Hughes movies? Structurally and mm-hmm. With the characters, take, I don't know, Pretty in Pink or 16 Candles or The Breakfast Club, all these classic John Hughes teen movies, comparing them to Fast Times, what's the difference? Because to me, I feel like John Hughes movies, they get to the bottom of characters and stuff like that. But I feel like Fast Times almost hits it deeper, like you really hit the characters a little bit harder because of these circumstances that they're put in. So we can kind of see a little bit how they would react more. And then we get to know them a little bit better. What do you guys think?
I love John Hughes.
Me too, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
There's two different kinds of John Hughes high school movie. Mm-hmm. There's the serious kind, Your Breakfast Club, You're Pretty in Pink, You're Some Kind of Wonderful. And then over here, you've got 16 Candles, Weird Science, Ferris Bueller, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that's fair.
But I think that Fast Times really kind of takes the best of both of those kind of categories and puts them into one movie. So all of the Stacy Rat stuff is very, it's serious. It's serious issues that they're dealing with, and you guys were talking about this the insecurities that they're feeling. They're trying to navigate all of that, and then you've got Spicoli doing his thing, and that's out of a different movie.
True.
And I'm not saying it doesn't fit; it totally fits. But it's just goofy fun, and even a lot of the Judge Reinhold stuff is very heightened. Mm-hmm. the wearing the pirate outfit in the car, trying to hit on a girl in the car next to him, and mm-hmm. That's a different kind of movie. But it all works together. It all melds really nicely in Fast Times, but it does kind of bridge those two kinds of John Hughes movies in a way that John Hughes movies don't really. He's kind of got this kind of movie, and then he's got this kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all ever have to wear a uniform like that for any job that you've had? I never did. So
not that silly. No, we had, I worked at a grocery store. We had a dress code, but it was like you had to wear a tie and, you know, it was oh, fairly okay. classy. So it was good. Yeah.
Right. No pirate costume, huh?
Mm-mm. No.
See, I think Fast Times is, overall, I think it's a technically better movie than most of John Hughes stuff, but because of when the John Hughes movies came out, they're definitely, you know, if I'm going to go back and watch an 80s teen movie, the first thing I'm thinking of is going to be a John Hughes movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's stuff from earlier in the decade that I just love. I mean, this Valley Girl, Last American Virgin.
Yeah.
But those aren't the ones, they didn't hit at the right age for me. So,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Breakfast Club is unequal. Like that's a masterpiece.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Nothing else compares to it for me, but this is kind of in the tier right below it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say that was, I would say Breakfast Club is probably the closest of the John Hughes movies to this, because even though it has its funny moments, it is tackling more serious things than the things he did. I mean, Pretty in Pink, yes, but it was still very safe. And, this one, but once again, I think it goes back to like, you know, John Hughes was clearly an adult who had a good voice for teenagers. He had his muse, Molly Ringwald, but you had Cameron Crowe that was like taking real, like they said, all these characters were drawn from like real people that he met. Like I'm sure composites of many different people, but probably, he was taking real situations that he saw going on in high school. Whereas Hughes probably did pull from some of his own high school experience, but it wasn't as current, I don't think. And so, I think Hughes had a way of like adding humor and heart, where this one, like Fast Times it's a great movie. It's not one that I would consider like a feel good movie. Like it's not one that I'd be like, oh, I feel like watching a really good, you know, a really happy, like comfort movie. It's not going to fit on my
There's some dark
movie
stuff in this movie.
Yeah. But if I want like a great 80s movie to sit down and really watch and like reminisce about the 80s, I would definitely put this on because it has all of that in it as well. So yeah, I think like I said at the beginning, I think you wouldn't have Breakfast Club if Fast Times did not succeed. And the studio didn't think Fast Times was going to be a hit. The studio hated it. And so much that they canceled it being in theaters on the East Coast because they didn't want to pay to put in the theaters because they thought it was going to bomb. And then when it became a hit in California, of course, on the West Coast, then it spread like wildfire. So because it was such a monster hit, they were like, oh, well, you know, this Breakfast Club, sure, we'll give it a shot. And so, yeah.
It is funny, right? Because it's early 80s. So there's certain things that seem almost 70s in a sense. Whereas like Breakfast Club, all those that we've been talking about really feel very 80s.
Yeah.
I think part of that is because it was later on in the decade, but part of it is also like, as the 80s progressed, we started getting more of like a feel for nostalgia of like the 50s.
And oh, for sure. Yeah.
Some of that kind of bled into the, I mean, you see it in, you know, Peggy Sue Got Married, Back to the Future, you know, all these. And so you kind of get a little bit of that in I feel some of the John Hughes films as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we're talking about dark stuff. Stacy, you know, she gets pregnant and she realizes like, I mean, she can't keep the baby. So she, you know, elects to terminate it. Like, how does it compassionately portray her predicament? Like, you know, cause she has to face this on her own. Right. I mean, Damone can't help, like he can't afford to help pay for it. Right. So she has to come up with it. She has to like go by herself, you know, like how does that really make the role and this situation just more dramatic?
You gotta give a lot of credit to, if not all of it, to Jennifer Jason Leigh, that performance, this the whole movie, but especially that part right there, and the other actors around her too. Like, I mean, I don't know Robert Romanus from a lot of other things, but Mike Damone is like a full character to me, man. He's a butthole, but he's like he's a real person to me.
Right.
And just the weaselly way that he kind of treats that whole situation just feels very real, which makes her predicament feel even more real, and her, you know, just the way that she handles it. And I love it. And I love, you know, when her brother finds out about it and how he reacts to it, you know, talk about compassion. Like, that's just a great, great scene. Cause they really haven't seen eye to eye on a lot of things. Like, he's a senior, she's a freshman, you know, she's a kid's sister. Mm-hmm. He's got his own thing going on. He doesn't have a lot of time with her. They're always kind of bickering about whose turn it is to clean the pool and stuff. Right. But in that moment, like, he's got her back, and it was really sweet.
Yeah, it was. I agree.
Yeah. Well, and I like, just from the compassion standpoint, I like how Fast Times handles it. But from a, I think from a realism standpoint, movies that, you know, tread the same ground, if you've never seen Last American Virgin, I think, I mean, it has a similar storyline.
Right.
And that one always struck me as a lot more real because she ends up going back to the guy and the one who, you know, was basically rat in that movie. You know, he's the one who gets dumped. And just situations that I witnessed when I was that age, that resonated with me so much more because I saw that over and over and over again. So
yeah, and then everybody hated Diane Frank, right?
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely some wish fulfillment going on in Fast Times, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
definitely. Sure. Yeah,
because we're all relating to Rat, you know, and so.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all everyone on this call is probably Rat.
Oh, I was definitely Rat. But yeah, Scott totally took what I was going to say. I was late to the party on Last American Virgin, but I feel the same way. It's almost like the cousin of Fast Times. Like there's a lot of similarities, the soundtracks and, you know, the needle drops and the some of the similar storylines. It's not as well done as Fast Times, but that part of the story of the compassion and the emotion, I think Last American Virgin kind of hits that. It hits harder in that movie. This one it hits, but it's just the gut punch is a little stronger in Last American Virgin.
Yeah, I gotcha. But speaking of, you know, you talked about soundtracks, man, this soundtrack is pretty killer.
Oh yeah.
And of course we get Jackson Brown, you know,
Somebody's Baby, like,
all over the place. I mean, they play it several times throughout. Soundtrack. I really like this one.
See, the day after I watched this, a post showed up on Facebook asking, you know, watch that and watch Valley Girl and which soundtrack is better. And I'm like, that's tough. Right. I'm like, I've got to go with Last American Virgin again.
You're like Sophie's Choice here, you know? Yeah. Favorite moments. I'm gonna steal something from Tim's show. What's your like favorite moments, standout scenes for you?
Well, I'll go first. You know, it's not anything about the story, but it's one of my favorite parts is when Spicoli and Forrest Whitaker's kid brother take his car and crash. He's like, my dad's a TV repairman, man. It's all about the tools. I can fix it. He's like, you're not gonna be able to fix it. And then they made it where it looked like the opposing team destroyed the car. And then it goes right into the football game where he's just tearing everybody up on the, like, that sequence, like, once again, very much a vignette that doesn't have anything to do with any other part of the movie. But like that little section has always been like one of my favorite parts of the movie. So I love that. And I love like watching it now, like going back and seeing Spicoli's face when Forrest Whitaker comes out and sees the car, you can tell he's like, I'm really scared that he's going to figure out that it's not real. And I'm going to get arrested. Like, you know, it's like, you know, he got sober real quick, you know, in
that moment. He had to go back to the van right after that.
Yeah. He's like, I got to go. I got to. Yeah, exactly.
Great.
One little snippet, it's just a little gag that I really, really like. And I don't know if young people were watching this today, if they didn't even understand what was going on. But Mr. Hand passes out all these papers into the class, mm-hmm. and all the kids are sniffing them because they're like mimeographed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, mimeographed, not a thing anymore.
Oh, no, definitely not.
I can't believe Bed Bath & Beyond doesn't have a candle with that smell. Stop a lot immediately.
I'd buy it for sure.
It's going in my office.
See, the football game and the robbery, those are my two favorite parts. Oh, of the movie.
Yeah, the robbery is great too. Yeah. Yeah,
I gotta say, like, the endings, right, that they give,
mm-hmm.
what happens in the future to these people, yes, are just
great.
They're so fantastical that they're just amazing. I mean, I gotta say, you know, so Stacy and Rat have like passionate love affair, but you know, they still haven't gone all the way yet. And
right.
Spicoli saves Brooke Shields,
right? Yeah.
Brooke Shields from drowning. So she gives him reward money, which he blows hiring Van Halen to play at a party. I mean, it's like, mm-hmm. it's like so perfect, but also so ridiculous.
Yeah. Right. Mr. Hand still believes every kid is on dope. Yeah.
Such a good, it's so good. I love it. And then Damone, right? He gets caught mm-hmm. like scalping tickets, and then he works at a gas station. Or I mean, it's just
he got what he deserved.
The downfall of Vic Damone. Okay, so I gotta say, if you could be in this like movie, you know, who would you be? Which character would you be?
Now or when I was in high school?
Right.
Either one. I'll take either. Yeah.
In high school, I crossed cliques a lot, especially my senior year. I'm trying to think who I would have hung out with. Probably Judge Reinhold.
Yeah.
But yeah, I probably would have been one of his buddies.
Nice.
Yeah, I definitely would have been Rat. Not gonna lie.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to be, you know, Rat or Brad, but I think I'd probably be Mr. Hand now.
Yeah, now I would be Mr. Hand.
I'm at that point now. It's like, I don't like dealing with kids.
I want to be Mr. Varga, but I can't.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Field trip, I wouldn't make it through.
Yeah, I love the scene where he's introducing the kids to his wife, and they're all just like, yeah. There's hope for, like, the nerd's like, there's hope for us.
Right.
So, oh, I know who I am in the movie. It's the blonde kid with the glasses. The goes to work at All American Burger. That was totally me.
Yes.
That's great.
Who was also in Police Academy sequels. Yes. Yeah. So, right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I was definitely Rat in high school. If I could go back, I'd probably want to be Brad as well. So,
yeah. Yeah. Same. Well, what would you guys say is your happiest like memory or moment with the film?
Hey, wait a minute. There's no birthday party for me here.
See, for me, it's got to be the first time we saw it, because my parents had, you know, season subscription to the theater. So every Friday or Saturday night, you know, they're off with their friends and we're at home with our friends and we're watching whatever's on Showtime that night.
Yeah.
And this was definitely a revelation.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I don't remember my first time watch, because I know, like I said, I know I watched it on television, but I remember watching it for the first time, like in high school. And like, even though, you know, a good 10, maybe 12 years removed from when it was released, it still had an impact on me. I still saw myself in the characters. So, you know, that's what makes a movie timeless. So yeah, it's probably that. Probably that time watching it as an actual teenager, because you know, if I would have watched it when it came out, even as a kid, I wouldn't have understood. A lot of it went way over my head. So,
yeah, not having those childhood memories, and even like, I don't think I've even had memories of it as a teenager. So I wasn't, you know, probably until my late teens or 20s when I actually saw it. So, like, even though, like, now I kind of connect the most to, like, I mean, what I like most about it is some of, like, the heavy themes and, like, just the way it handles a lot of that stuff. But my favorite parts, the parts that make me the happiest, are Spicoli and Hand. Like, it just their kind of relationship throughout the course of the year. I love that end where he's, like, and, you know, he leaves it kind of open to question whether he's going to pass. He goes, "Yeah, hey, you'll probably squeak by.
Squeak by, yeah.
But only because I don't want to see you next year."
You're right.
Right, you know.
But there's still like this kind of begrudging, not a respect necessarily, but like, okay, we're just going to end the year on a good note just because I want to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, right? He thinks, like, he knows that, yeah, he's a stoner. He doesn't really try, but also he knows that he could be, like, a really smart guy if he tried. So
he's getting right answers in that study session, right? Like he's grasping some of it. Yeah.
Right. So it's like, he's just almost just doesn't want to see him, you know, just waste his talents or, you know, So you're right. That is kind of a cool moment. I got to say the most memorable part for me was probably Phoebe Cates. So, you know, it is what it is.
But someone had to say
it's a great car song.
We're all thinking it. I'll say it.
Moving Hysteria was an awesome song.
Hi, Brad. You know how cute I always thought you were.
It is a great song, yes. Yeah.
But, I will say that I probably saw that scene before I saw the movie. So, because some friend showed it to me that had recorded it off of Showtime. And you know, you got to watch this part. And so,
poor Brad. Got to lock those doors, Brad. Well, now we come to my favorite part of the show, which is a little segment I call Gag Me with the Spoon, where we do our best impression of our least favorite part of the movie here. As a guest, I'll let you go first. Just kind of set up the scene a little bit for us so we know where we are. And whoever wants to go first is fine.
I'll stick with Spicoli in Hand, and it's Spicoli orders pizza and says, "Mr. Spicoli has been kind enough to bring us a snack. Be my guest. Help yourselves. Get a good one." I am so, like, just righteously indignant about Hand giving away Spicoli's pizza. Like, no.
I had that happen in a class. It wasn't pizza, it was gum. And the teacher said, you know, you've got to have enough for everyone. And this kid goes, okay. And he pulls out this huge bag and he puts it on his desk. And she didn't let us have the gum. She sent him to the principal's office.
So, she got called out.
He called her bluff. Yep.
I was a band director in Houston and I did have a student. I was teaching a class because I had to teach other classes too. So one was like music theory, music history. And I'll never forget, one kid did order pizza, but I ended up turning it, like telling him to go downstairs. And the orchestra teachers who, like, we shared the same space at the time, ended up just taking it and eating. They had it in their office. So, so the kid didn't get it. I, you know, it is what it is. I'm sorry. So, I guess I am Mr. Hand. What about you, Tim?
I don't, you know, this is one of those few movies where I don't know there's a part that I didn't like or like a line that felt like it was, you know, out of place. So this was hard for me. But I will say, like, one of the most cliched or, you know, our trope is, but it's still funny, was when Mike's talking to a Rat about, you know, him having a crush when he first finds he has a crush on Stacy. And he's like, you know, "This is going to be just like last summer. You fell over that girl at the photo mat and bought like $40 worth of film and never talked to her. You don't even know on camera." Like, you know, it was funny, but I'm like, you can pick any 80s comedy, you know, that's going to be a joke that's going to land in there somewhere. But so that's it for me. But the only other one is, once again, it's just when it's Spicoli, go ahead, Scott. I hope I won't steal yours. So
like Tim, it's hard to pick something that I didn't like. The only thing that, and I still love the scene, but, you know, back in grade school and at the start of high school, everybody had a Spicoli impression. So when you hear the awesome, totally awesome line now, it just brings back every single one of those kids who, you know, thought they were as cool as Spicoli. So
it was the height of comedy to imitate.
Oh, yeah. It was. Uh-huh. Yeah. For sure. So I went with the Damone line as well. So only because this is like one of my all-time favorite bands, and I hated that they did him dirty. But when they ask him if he's got Blue Oyster Cult, he's like, no, I don't have any Blue Oyster Cult. I ate 34 pears last time around. Where were you? I was like, come on, man. Like, they just released Burn In For You. Like, where? Come on, everybody has to go see Blue Oyster Cult now. But, you know, G.I. Joe taught us that knowing is half the battle. What do you think the other half is?
Pause button.
Locking the bathroom door.
That was totally mine, too.
I had to say it when somebody else took it.
We were all on the same wavelength.
Yeah, we are. Yep.
Guys, this has been a lot of fun talking about this Christmas adjacent movie. Tell me about your shows or anything you want to plug. Why don't we start with you, Scott?
I am still on hiatus. I'm trying to come up with something new. So hopefully by the end of the year.
Right on. Tim?
80s Flick Flashback. We're still rolling along. Cool thing that I'm doing right now is actually going back and redoing some of the episodes that did my first season. We started back in 2020. I didn't know what I was doing, trying to figure things out. And so we covered some big movies back then. So we've redone Raiders of the Lost Ark. We redid Goonies, and we just recently redid Stand By Me, which are, you know, three of my like all-time favorite 80s movies. So we got a few more of those coming up. So got some fun ones coming up. Commando should be coming out later this week.
That's good.
Nice. And then also I've got Cannonball Run, which I was finally got some guys to go. What do Cannonball Run should be coming out the end of this month. So check us out. 80s Flick Flashback.
Right on. Michael?
Yeah, my main show is After Lunch, which is, it's kind of a general purpose. We talk a lot about movies. We play a lot of stupid games. We also, my friend Paxton Holly and I do a Western podcast called Hellbent for Letterbox.
Yep.
And as we head into September here, Pax and Sean Robert and I do a show called Crestwood House, which is all about pre-1980s horror. So that runs in September and October.
Cool.
Yep. All great stuff. All those shows. So make sure you check them out. I mean, you can't go wrong with any of them, honestly. Guys, thanks again. This was fun.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry.
Had a blast.
And I'll end it with Aloha, Mr. Hand. So check us out on our social media pages, which you can find at linktree.com/totallyradchristmas. And if you're feeling like Mark, having a passionate love affair with Stacy, leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us reach more people and spread some rad holiday cheer. Now, don't forget to check out our merch shop on tpublic.com and our super dope website, totallyradchristmas.com. What are you people, on dope? Later, dudes.
Hi. Can I know you from biology class?
Yeah.
What can I do for you?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. I was curious. What do you do with the jackets that people leave here?
We keep them.
You keep them?
In case you come back. You can look through it if you want.
No, that's cool. It would take too long to look through all that stuff. I'll pick up a new one.
What was your other question?
Oh, my other question is, can I have your phone number so I can ask you out sometime?
Do you have a pen? This one's out of ink.
Yeah. Stacy. Nice to meet you, Stacy. My name is Mark Ratner. I've got to go.